The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. That music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. This is part of our series of preview podcasts for the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival happening in downtown Rochester, New York from September 9th to the 20th. Go to rochesterfringe.com to get your tickets for all of the events going on around Rochester. So many cool venues. Make sure you get the app as well, so when you're out and about on a night and you want to find another place to go, you can find it on the fly. And I have some guests calling in remote. Guests, why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Doug Della Scavage. I'm the front man of Philadelphia Freedom, a tribute to Elton John.
Hi, I'm Mike Shaw. I'm the drummer of Philadelphia Freedom, a tribute to Elton John.
Yeah, and the show is Philadelphia Freedom, a tribute to Elton John, happening on Friday, September 19th at 8:05 and September 20th at 8:05 at the Hochstein School at the Hochstein Performance Hall. So, guys, tell me a little bit about the show. I mean, the name says a lot about the show, but why don't you guys tell me, like, hey, why this show, and what does it mean to you?
This first, we just all have a very equal love, mutual love for Elton John's music. For us personally, for this show, we have been up to Rochester a couple times, but for us, this is nice. We've never had like a headlining show up in the area there. So this is a great opportunity. Our drummer actually, Mike, works at the venue, and it just all came together very nice. And we're really happy to have that opportunity to come up twice.
Yeah. It's also a great opportunity for Hochstein because we're trying to branch out and become more of a venue. So it's kind of a win-win for everybody in the situation.
Yeah. So Mike, tell us a little bit about Hochstein. What is it known as now? And then we'll talk about, you know, some of the future as well.
I'd say Hochstein is mostly known as a school for music and dance. There's actually some art too, but we've had a lot of changes recently, like positive changes, lots of new people, and we're just trying to become more adaptable to becoming a venue. So this is like one of the first like test shows, and Fringe letting us do this is really good for the school too. It promotes the school. I think we've been known in the community as a really good school to go to for kids who might want to pursue playing in an orchestra or something, like usually classical related. We have like jazz camps too and stuff like that. But we're just like branching out a little more. Like we've done a little rock camp thing too, and we've done all sorts of stuff recently. So we're changing up a little bit, but I guess, short story, we're known for being a music school that prepares students really well for their next chapter in life, I guess.
Well, and I think being able to express that, regardless if you're going to take that, you know, further as like a passionate pursuit, or just having the opportunity to express yourself and learn about yourself as, you know, somebody who enjoys music or enjoys performance, and being able to see the joy in it from all the different angles, not just listening to it, but also contributing and participating and learning about, hey, what it takes to do this at a really high level.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's a great thing. And, you know, somebody who grew up singing and, you know, doing that in, you know, choral situations, you know, makes you think about, oh yeah, it is really difficult to do this well. And speaking of which, so why don't you tell me a little bit about, let's talk about Elton John and what appealed to you as a performer. So why don't you go ahead and jump in? The person who has like the whole getup on. If you're listening down audio, I've got the video of somebody who is living the life right now.
I fear I might be to overdressed. I mean, for me, I started piano. I taught myself at an early age. I was about 5 years old. I went back and forth between a few artists, but Elton John was always like, he was a favorite for me. I loved his style, his way of songwriting. I get a lot of inspiration from him, even for my own music that I write. And it just kind of started as just playing, you know, top 40 songs or something, maybe a few Elton tunes, and eventually just, I guess I kind of took favor towards that and eventually just started building the set around just Elton tunes and got a few like-minded fellow musicians as well that felt the same way. And yeah, we fell into it. It kind of just morphed, and a lot of us go back some years, like long before we even did the Elton band, and we just played together as musicians from like high school, early high school. So it kind of just morphed into it, and we all just have a love for his music. It's great music. It's timeless. It's fun to play, like just on the music side of it. It's fun music to play.
Well, yeah, and it's also, it has this, you know, like you said, it is timeless. Like, it's fun. It's bouncy. There's songs that kids are going to love. There's songs that, you know, serious musicians are going to love, because it was never not serious, right? It was always music taken and done really well. And he was also a super technically sharp singer and an amazing pianist. And to hear all of that also then treated with fun songs is like, there's also that theatrical nature to the performance and also the get-ups.
No, absolutely. It's a show. You're never going to get the same show. It's always something different, you know, and we try to do that early mid 70s, you know, where that's kind of the tone we go for. It's always something different, always different shows, always different ways of playing it too. Like we always try different things, you know. We're never playing the songs the exact same way. We love, you know, the frame's always there of it, but we love moving around, kind of making it a little different each show.
Yeah,
that's so, what Elton would do. He never did two concerts ever the same. So like we try to keep that too.
Well, I think that's the other thing, as somebody who is, you know, in many ways still doing it, right, is like, that's where the talent is. Like, you know, a lot of people have moments where they go and they burn out, and then you have some of these, like, you can see the talent because it changes, right? You change as you age. You're not the same performer. But the fact that you can still do it and people still want to go see you play and they want to hear you, like, what a testament to a performer and the timelessness and the, like, the enjoyability of all of those aspects of that.
It's so inspirational to like see, like, over these past 50 plus years, how relevant like Elton has stayed over these decades, and like how many different sections you could even break up, like of different generations he's reached out. You know, you have his classic sound in the 70s, 80s, but then, you know, he does the music for The Lion King in the 90s and touches that. That was my generation, you know, like that was one of the first Elton songs I heard. And then now even he does a lot of work with, like, he does, like, I'm a teacher, a music teacher actually, and the, what, like, last year the popular song of the year was I'm Still Standing, but it was the version from Sing. It's amazing how he just constantly reaches out to new generations of people. And yeah,
I mean, that, and it's amazing how popular stuff like that is, which are essentially like, yeah, jukebox, sure, performances that, like, you know, kids don't see it as like essentially a theater performance. Like, those are theater jukebox performances in a way that, like, is hard for, like, kids have no idea that that's what it is, because that's, yeah, all those are. And it's like, there's no story. Like, let's be serious. This is an opportunity to hear some cool music and see some animation. But, like, but also, hey, if we can introduce kids to, like, great timeless music, yeah, what's the harm in that? So, like Mike, when you're thinking about doing, you know, drumming for this, was there techniques that you learned as part of doing this, yes, that you didn't already know that you had to, you know, become proficient in?
So, yeah, definitely. I had to make sure that I was really in time all the time, like perfectly in time, which was, I mean, that's like a thing for every drummer, I guess. But with this band, the pocket is super important. And also, like, not playing too fast. And, you know, the harmonies, learning how to sing while playing drums, that was probably the most challenging thing. Because sometimes the rhythm that you're singing doesn't match up with what you're playing. So I would say that was the hardest thing for me to adjust to. But at this point, like, we've been playing for so long now, like, I'm pretty much used to it. So it's almost like second nature. But
yeah. No, yeah. That's cool, because it's like, drumming's one of those things, and I know my wife and I, we found ourselves watching, you know, watching some of those YouTube shows about, you know, the drum, one of the drum things online was a Drumeo, is we've seen a lot of these videos about, you know, drummers playing songs they've never heard, and seeing all these techniques and having them learn how to do music. It's so fascinating, as somebody where wasn't necessarily my core. My wife grew up around musicians and drumming, and she has a, you know, she grew up around it, so she has a different familiarity. But learning what goes into, you know, how much it becomes the core of the song, and people don't always realize it until it's not good and it doesn't go well, how important it is to their enjoyment of what the song is.
Yeah, things can fall apart pretty quick.
that is a knowing laugh if I've ever seen one.
We had a couple burnouts, Mike, and it happened.
Oh,
the trick is how good you fake it.
Yeah, and how many people ever notice except for you?
Yeah, they tend not to for some reason, but I guess we're our own worst critics.
Such is live performance, right? When you said, hey, every performance is different.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was kind of wondering, because you know, you're talking, so you're doing both piano and vocals.
Yeah,
I mean, when you're talking about range, like, this is not a simple vocal range musician, nor is it a simple piano playing range of playing. For you, like, since you've been doing it for a while, have you seen your voice change? Have you found it different, you know, doing these songs and hitting the different ranges? And has it changed the way you do the performances?
Absolutely. I mean, I have noticed over the years, looking back, my range has definitely increased a lot. I mean, I guess the way I would describe it, like, 5 years ago, singing shows, I was hitting all the same notes, all the high notes, all the low notes, they were there. But, like, listening back to them now, like, it's so much different now, like, how, like, it opened up more, the sound of it matured as I kind of got the witticisms of his character in his tone and everything. And it's a struggle. I mean, still now, I got better with this over the years, but the hardest thing I would struggle, you know, one show, great. Two shows in a row, pretty great. Three shows, it's tough. Like, it really would take a toll on my voice. You know, there was a while in the beginning where I'd do one, two shows in a row, I'd be shot for, like, the next 3 days with my voice.
Oh, yeah.
Like, now And I could tell it's purely based on technique now, because now I could sing 2-3 shows in a row. And the next day, if I had to sing, I could. Singing his songs in and of itself is technical practice. There's just about every technical exercise you could find in his songs. But yeah, definitely.
Well, and that's also the experience, right? Where you can force it purely through your throat, right? You can force a song, you can force a night, but you're going to be shot. And then you're all diaphragm. Once you're all diaphragm and you're bringing it from down there, you can really bring that vibrancy too. And that's the other thing is, like, that's the thing that changes too. You might hit the notes, but do you hit that, you know, that richness, that, you know, some of those, like when you're hitting those, you know, that's where you bring the emotion. That's where you bring the characters, that richness of tone. It kind of reminds me, like, you know, not, I think it's thankfully, I'll say this is the first time I brought it up, you know, in this series of interviews, but reminds me when, you know, I was listening to some of the, like, you know, Taylor Swift remakes not that long ago. And I listened just back to back from the original to the new, and where you can hear life. You can hear how life has changed somebody, both as growing up and growing up as, you know, growing up as an adult, but growing up as a person. You can hear that tonal change that occurs over time, because you can't be the same performer that you were when you started doing this, right? You're learning something about yourself during this too, that is, you can't separate it from what you're doing.
Like you said, the experience, you can't teach that. It's something you just learn over time. I could not agree more with what you said there. Like, I used to sing it to, like, struggle, you know, just to survive the performance. Like, now I could fall into it now. Like, there's so much more layer to it. You can get character to it. You could get the story development, build the dynamics with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's that little stuff too, right? Songs that are light and bouncy, like, but you can always grab something from it the more you know about the person. And it has to be interesting too, like, performing this as much as you do, like, that you're learning about like Elton John as a person too. And you can understand the songs differently than maybe you did when you first started.
Definitely. Like, the lyrics hit different, you know. You read the lyrics, I read them 10 years ago, at just at face value. But now it's like the music, the way it all goes together. Growing up to, you know, being older now, like, looking at it differently. Yeah, like, there's some pretty deep lyrics and powerful stuff in his songs.
Yeah, and I gotta say, like, it's also, yeah, I think in the last few years, you know, you've seen him as, like, the elder statesman show up now. And I think in some of the coolest ways that an elder statesman of music has shown up, where you see him come on as a guest. I think it was on a Howard Stern interview that I saw clips from, where he was talking to Metallica and telling them how much he loved their songs and how much he loved them. And you could see them just, like, melting to hear him say that about them. But, like, that meant so much. Like, it meant so much to them to hear somebody like that say, you know, you guys brought it. You're, like, the best of your genre. You are true musicians. And you could just see them become, like, little kids, hearing somebody that they loved talk about that in a completely different genre of music. And then you also see him, like, also performing in the new Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap 2 that's coming out. Yeah. how fucking cool is that? Like, you can bring Metallica to tears and then perform on, like, one of the weirdest Spinal Tap songs.
I really want to see that. I need to watch that. I just saw the trailer.
It's pretty wild. I was blown away by that. That was crazy.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's one of the great things to say, like, yes, you've contributed, but part of being, It's one of the biggest responsibilities and luxuries of having that impact, is that you can choose to be a recluse, you can choose to be a dick, and you can also choose to be a decent person who is, you know, trying to make others better, and, you know, being more out, being more, you know, present, and, you know, not, you know, not thinking that the new music is beneath you. Like, it also has to be good, like, when you're performing this stuff, and as you grow up, you think, oh, yeah, it's also really good that, yes, the music is great, but it turns out it's really nice to be representing a cool-ass person.
Yeah. I mean, on the topic, like, one thing he does so much is his involvement with, like, new upcoming artists and musicians. He's so involved with them. Like, he takes the helm with them, signs them, takes them under his own personal wing, everything. And the amount of young artists that he helped is truly inspiring. I mean, you know, that's not something he has to do. He chooses to do that. And that's great. It's really inspiring.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We're going down more down the Elton John route. It's just, I just find it a fascinating topic just because it brings in so many things that I think we all try to think about is, how can we make our own impact? How can we do something we're proud of with whatever we're doing? So I kind of want to pivot back to, you know, to the performances. When you're thinking about formulating a show, how is the show changing, right? Do you change the show for every performance? Is it changed? You know, is the set list changed for, you know, different venues, different styles of shows? How do you think about creating each performance as its own thing?
A lot of it I found came from, like, trial and error. Like, you know, just in the beginning, just putting a set list together and just seeing kind of how people react to it. You know, we're always, like, very visual with the audience, like, seeing, like, how people are reacting to songs. And usually you could tell, like, and what's really interesting too is, like, the placement of those songs. Like, you know, sometimes, like, we can get a reaction on, like, Candle in the Wind, like, almost no reaction if we do it as, like, our second song. But then something just about, like, the flow and the tone of the night, like, just makes something right that when we play it, like, towards the end of the show, it's a hit, like a hit with the audience. So a lot of it definitely came, like, just through, like, kind of experience with it. But venues definitely are a huge factor as well. Like, we tend to, when we're doing, like, outside venues a lot, especially, like, you know, if it's like a standing show, even if it's inside and, like, standing, you know, we always try to keep it a little more on the upbeat. Then, you know, you throw those little calm, mellow ones in maybe every now and then just to kind of give them a little dip and then kind of take it back off. You know, we did a show a couple weeks ago down in Columbia, Maryland. That was a little more intimate. Like, you know, it was a smaller room, only a few hundred people, but everybody was kind of sitting at, like, dinner type tables. So, yeah, like, a lot of it just kind of trial and error over the years. And just now we kind of, we understand the songs a lot more in depth now than, you know, maybe a few years ago. So, like, we actually, I mean, like, we kind of, like, I like every one of us pretty much takes a crack at making set lists. I mean, there's really no set person. Like, we kind of all just get the vibe of the room, especially if it's a place we're coming back to repeating. And yeah, we just build around that. Yeah, and sometimes we have switched things on the spot too before.
Yeah, we're very adaptable. Like, we can change it as we go if we feel like it needs to change. Like, sometimes we'll make a set list and we like want more energy from the crowd, so we're just like, all right, we're gonna play this song instead, and we just go for it, and everybody's on the same page somehow every time. I don't know how.
We have our little cues. I usually turn around, whisper it to Aaron, then he passes it down the line.
Yeah, a little bit of school note passing.
Honestly, sometimes it's not even verbal. Like, yeah, it's hard to explain, but, like, sometimes, like, if it's just me on the piano, they we're so integrated around each other's playing, and we know, like, each other inside and out with that. So, like God forbid, if I hit, like, you know, we're doing Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, sometimes I get a little tired. Maybe we have to take it out only two times, not the third time. God forbid, you know, if I want to go for the third time and I play that one chord a little too slow, it triggers the guys, like, oh, let's end the song.
Yeah, they know you guys know each other too well. Yeah, you're anticipating too much. Like, stop thinking about me so much.
The best are the surprises when I get up and do something different, and then I kind of low-key seeing them freak out a little bit on stage. I'm like, wow, we're good. We're good. And we always hit it. It always hits on the down. We always get it.
Yeah, and I think that's also it's one of those things that you don't realize so much when you're talking about your reading, right? It's that reading, right? You're reading the room, you're reading your bandmates. Pacing is one of those things that is the hardest thing to understand until you've lived a little bit more. It's those little things, right? Where you know how to, even with the little interstitials, right? When you're talking to the audience, mm-hmm. you know how to pace to them differently. You know how to, you can feel that lull and then you adapt to it. Those are the only kind of things you can't do that. It's really hard to do when you're 20 to like understand the feeling of something and, you know, change the pace and be able to flex in and out and do it differently. Those little nuances, those are things that people don't notice, but they notice when they're wrong.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the beginning when I started, I probably like most, you know, you just the set lists around this you like. It's just natural, you know, you learn the stuff you like and you want to go out and play it. And then, you know, I used to build the Elton set lists like just put it in order that we like it to be. And like, no, like it's about the audience. It's about what they want to hear. And if a song and like you're doing a couple songs and good reaction, then you start to do another one and then you like a 180, you do something about that quick. Definitely.
Yeah. So I think we're going to round up, but so Mike, why don't you put some plugs in for Hochstein first, and then I'll get in the plugs for the show.
Oh man. Well, we just started our semester. So I guess if I have any plugs, just sign up for classes because I have a lot of really good teachers. There's some really good teachers at Hochstein.
Yeah. So are there other opportunities there for, it seems like this is not a place just for kids. It seems like there's opportunities for lots of different people too.
Yeah. All ages. Anybody who wants to learn anything, it's never too late to learn whatever you want.
Yeah. So
we probably have it.
Yeah. So make sure, go to hochstein.org. That's hochstein.org. You can take a look at all the classes, and either if you're kids or you are learning, wanting to learn how to express yourself in different ways, seems like that's a great opportunity to try something out and, learn with other people, which is one of the great joys in life, to try to learn and do something and, expand what you like. Definitely. I'm going to put out the plugs for the show again. So that's Friday the 19th and September the 20th on Saturday at 8:05 at the Hochstein School. Why don't you throw out any other places where people can find your stuff so people can check it out?
Definitely. You could subscribe. You could check us out on our website at www.philadelphiafreedomtribute.com. We post all our tour dates up there. You could subscribe to our mailing list to keep updated on all upcoming shows. You could follow us on Facebook, Instagram at Philadelphia Freedom, a tribute to Elton John.
Awesome. Well, thank you, boys, for stepping into the Food About Town podcast studios remotely and coming on Just Can't Not. If you want to check out our show for the Lunch at Our Podcast Network, go to the downtown branch of the public library on September 13th at 3:00. We're doing a improv style podcast where our hosts will have no idea about the things they're talking about until we start. So we are super excited about that. And go to all the shows, go to as many shows you can during Fringe, rochesterfringe.com. Thank you so much. And we'll be back next time with more Just Can't Not.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Just want you to sit with the lyrics. Think about what it means to you to really crocodile rock. You'll learn so much about yourself and maybe something about society at the same time.